Good. How are you guys?
Fantastic. Good. Just off the bat, we both thought it was a love story. She thought it was Cinderella-esque.
I thought it was like a fairy tale. It had like an undertone where I was like, this is a fairy tale.
I thought more of it as a very, very... As they quoted me on my exit interview, a fucking twisted boy meets girl love story. And I loved it, and that's how I saw it.
Well, you're not saying opposite things. Those are similar.
Dane looked at me like I was crazy.
I think he's crazy.
He looked at us like crazy. Everybody else thinks we're kind of nuts. What would be your take on that kind of view?
Well, no, I mean, look, I think that there is, yeah, sure. I think, you know, I always love the end of The Graduate, right? The end of the movie The Graduate. They don't...
Oh, The Graduate.
Yeah, by the end, you don't know where they're going. Like, where are they going? What are they going to do? And this movie, there's really two worlds. I mean, there's the world, there's the modern contemporary world, and there's the world of Vollmer and the place above the clouds that has sort of been diagnosing humanity over time. And I think, I do think it is sort of a contemporary gothic fairy tale in many ways, and I think he's sort of being summoned to this place. So, and it's a little out of bounds, you know. It's a little, so we start to slip into a kind of dream logic, you know, not a waking state. But the closer he gets, you know, his cell phone stops working, his watch stops. He's kind of off the. He's not in the kind of strictly logical world anymore.
Off the beaten path for sure.
Yeah, I think you know you can be more haunting in that space.
Now, when you were describing, because it kind of fits all kinds of genres, you know, studios always want to know what genre it's going to be. I mean, is it difficult to sell a film like this where it's, you know, it could be many things?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because the second person asked me. I mean, it has a Fox logo on it, but they're a distributor only. I mean, it's a New Regency picture, and so it's 100% financed by New Regency, so they just have a distribution deal with Fox. So it's not really a major. I mean, they're kind of a mini major, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, I think it would be impossible to have made it directly with a major.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like this was maybe your pet project, and you found a production company in a studio with some balls to get it out there. Would that be fair?
I'm not quite sure. Yeah, I mean, I'm not quite sure how we... hypnosis, you know? I don't know how... I mean, sometimes you just have to... You just have to, in your mind, you just go, I'm making this. And you don't ask for... You ask for forgiveness, not permission. You know, you just kind of... And I think if you have doubts, people pick up on that. If you have passion, you know, particularly in the case of Arnon, who's the owner of New Regency, I think he just, you know, he has a real... a love for passion.
So Dane and Mia are so distinguished characters, such distinguished characters. What was the casting process like? They're both so unique.
Yeah, well, Dane's character, Justin and I were writing him sort of intentionally as a bit of an asshole, right? I mean, he has to be vulnerable to the diagnosis of this place, right? So he has to have a greater distance to fall. He has to, because I think this sort of concept of the diagnosis is a form of absolution. Like, you're not responsible for the things you've done in your life because you're not well, right? It's like a note from doctor or a and that's a narcotic for these people. And you get into this sort of lotus eaters, or, you know, there's a reason they want to stay there when they arrive and they don't want to leave. And that's the beginning. And so casting Dane was, you know, knowing that we had a character that was sort of infinitely not likable, it was important to have that inhabited by an actor who you continue wanting to watch, you know. And so there has to, and he has a real singularity about him. I think there's something unusual about him, and then as he starts to have doubts, we empathize more with him, you know, throughout the process. And then Mia, really difficult role, because it's almost like there was something really wonderful about Shelley Duvall in The Shining, you know, And so we're writing this character and going, who are we going to get to cast this? I mean, who are we going to get to play this part? And because you can't really put on mannerisms to fake that. I mean, she has a very, she's been kept in this place, but it's like if you have an in-depth conversation with somebody who was grew up in North Korea or whatever, like there's a cult, there's a kind of, you're going to have a worldview that's going to be, it's not naive, it's like, no, this is a belief system. And she's watched these old people come and be processed. She's a really interesting perspective. Mm-hmm. In the way, you know, when a child asks you why, right, by the third time, you're usually into something pretty profound. You know, you're usually explaining to it. You either, you, inevitably you're saying that's a really good question because you can't answer it, right? Because it has to do with, like, why do we lie to people to make them feel better or what, you know. And there's some beautiful truth to that. She came in and read, and it was like, it was like, done. You know, because when you meet her, it's who she is.
Yeah.
It's not, you're not, she's not, like, I don't want to say no acting required. She's really in the moment. She was, but it's a very specific tone. I can't imagine somebody pretending to be what she is.
Yeah, I really can't imagine anyone else playing them.
Yeah, no, she was born to play this, to play Hannah.
Did you shoot more than one ending?
One ending?
That was it, right?
Okay. For Lockhart, the protagonist, in the beginning of the movie, you know, he's a Wall Street guy, and we learn that he does some type of underhanded, you know, trading or to get his position. How did you write that character and then make him into someone that we're going to cheer for in the movie?
Well, that's what I mean. The place is designed to prey upon people like that, right? This is like oligarchs and heads of industry and people who have achieved things at all costs, right? I'm gonna succeed at all costs, but the bills come due, right? I mean, you know, there is, you know, what is wellness, right? I mean, is it money? Is it success? What is wellness? And I think really to sort of say he has it. He's younger than the rest of them, but he has the sickness in spades. And also, I think when he's reading that letter from Pembroke, I feel like it's speaking to his core being, right? I mean, there's, even when you're in denial, you sense something, right? I mean, he probably will not articulate it, but he probably knows, he doesn't make a clay pot, and he doesn't make shoes or a guitar. He makes money off other people who make money off other people who make money off other people who make things. So there's a real identity issue there, right? I'm like, who am I? What is my service? You have like net worth versus self-worth. Like, what is my purpose? What am I, you know? And I think that's what this place. So he's almost reverse engineered to be susceptible to this diagnosis, if that makes sense.
Now, how did you, because his character is deconstructed over the course of the movie, so when you go back to certain scenes, how do you keep that emotional space? I mean, how did you keep track of that?
Yeah, it's really, that's the hardest part, honestly. It's particularly because, it's very difficult these days to get the means to make a large movie if you don't have a theme park ride or you know, a toy or a comic book or something. So, you know, we had to stay relatively modest in our size so that we could move quickly. And so we shot at the castle exterior for 11 days, and then we were on the other side of Germany. We found this old hospital that was abandoned and covered in graffiti, and we repainted it and put some new windows in, and then we needed a swimming pool. We drove to a little town called Zwickau. We found a swimming pool that kind of had tile that was sort of the same color, and we built a little hallway transition that we painted to kind of get us there. So, and none of that shot in chronological order. We had a little bit of a set on stage that caught on fire in the ending, and we burned the stage down, so we had to come back a month later. So the whole plan was the most out of order filming I think I've ever done, and to manage his performance, because he's, you know, he's like the lid is sort of rattling, you know, the water's boiling, and he's in that place where he's just and to say walk down a corridor, turn left, and you're going to be in the scene we shot 20 days earlier, or we're going to the scene we're going to shoot in a month, it becomes a very specific conversation, and you know, you kind of rehearse. You almost have to back up, even though we're not in that space yet. We back up and we just run, you know, the scene before.
Just to get him in that space.
Yeah, just, you have to. Like, we're gonna, you know, you're cutting this. You know, this piece is gonna end up in the movie, but you kind of need all that stuff before and after it, even when you're just getting that piece, it won't sit.
The movie plays a lot to people's phobias. Can you share some of yours?
Well, I think the primary one is this idea that you know, when I make a movie, I'm away from my family for 6 months, a year, and there's real guilt with that. And I think to be vulnerable to that diagnosis, to say, look, you're not responsible, you know, because you're not well, or to have a sort of no, to be excused from that seems really, I could see myself falling victim to that in many ways. But just the hardwired stuff, the dream, the nightmares, you know, things that slither, dental work, drowning. You bring it all to, you know, you try to find something that is specific enough to not be generic. And then also to create a sort of untrustworthy narrator, you know, where you're not, it's very important to go too far once in a while so that the audience isn't sure you're going to go there the next time. You know, if we always just go to the boundary and never cross it, you kind of feel like, okay, they're just going to, you know, but if like in the little brief dental scene, or if like there's a few places where we're going to go, you know, right past it, and then you're watching the movie going, I don't trust that they're not going to go there again, or, you know, and I think that keeps you off balance.
The hose down the throat, I laughed and I thought to myself, huh, they really just did that. All right.
Good. All right. You sound like you're our audience.
No, we were mortified.
Yeah. Well, speaking of like tension and creating unease in the audience and things like that, talk about like the tone, the aesthetics.
Sure.
Of everything.
Look, I think what I love about the genre is you have. You know, you have two ways to tell a story. There's the hand on the back, like leading somebody through a narrative, which is a sure hand, and that works for like Rango or Pirates. And then there's the breadcrumb, right, approach, where you're letting them nibble their way through the maze. And I think if you can bring that to bear, you know, the little sort of squeaky door in your forehead opens up, and we have access to your hard drive, and we can put things there that hopefully 3 or 4 days later, there's some side effects to the cure. Right? There's something that you're going to think about after you've watched the movie. And look, you're watching Dane DeHaan reluctantly become a patient at this institute, right? But really, you're the patient. Right? You're in the darkened room. We're using sound and image, and we are conducting an experiment on you. And I think the genre, that's why I love the genre. It's something, you know, perverse about it, but you get to conduct an experiment on the audience.
I was going to ask, you're familiar with the term deus ex machina, right?
Yeah.
As far as like writers and how just third act magically gets resolved. I like how there was always some sort of anchor, psychological anchor for his character. They brought him back, whether it be the ballerina, the cast, something that's like, okay, no, I came here for something, right? Was that like how difficult was that to just keep that relevant throughout all first, second, third act?
Well, I think that's the glue, right? The sense that something inevitable is accruing here, and that's why it's not only in you know, water and metaphor hatch, you know, rebirth or hatching, or you know, but it's in every frame. The sense that there is. We talked at length about Justin and I about like what if sickness were the narrative? Like what if somehow the sense of something inevitable is happening? Was there like a cancer, like a black spot on your X-ray, or something pulling the camera down the corridor, pulling the protagonist towards his epiphany? We're trying to, you know, we would do that. And I would use that word when we're talking about a camera mover. I would record like really wheezing breath, like just like, and then we would slow it down and pitch it, and it would be like the room tone, like the ambient, you know, sonic track is if you it's not constant, it's very slowly shifting, so everything is sort of there's a sense of something, you know, there's a darkness or a sickness present in everything, and you're never going to escape it.
I think it was brilliantly done. It wasn't like a cheap cop out. Like, yeah, this is how we're gonna resolve it. Pretty little Tiffany bow on it, and boom. It felt like it was always there. Reality always crept up somehow. So thank you.
I wanted to ask you. You obviously have a taste for the bizarre. I love Rango. And when I finished the film, I was like, yeah, bizarre. Do you tend to lean towards that?
This would be the last question.
Well,
but in a good way. Not saying like in a bad way. Just saying like you'd like to think outside the box. Not stick to formula.
Sure. I mean, you know, anytime you can use a fresh analogy, you're gonna draw a picture. Right? I mean, we don't. When somebody says sick as a dog, you don't think, right? But you know, if you, I don't know, whatever. You could. You're a writer. You know, when you're looking for a sentence that like you love a well constructed sentence because. You know, I do that when I'm reading. I'll just the craft of like a really beautiful sentence, the wordsmithing, and it's using fresh ideas or getting into some place where, you know, you're looking for a singularity, right? So it doesn't, and yeah, whether that's bizarre or just out of bounds, slightly, I think that sometimes it sticks better.
Right. I'm just asking because some people, like we said, you know, when the movie let out, everybody had variations of reactions. And I was telling someone, but I like bizarre. I like watching bizarre stuff. While other people might make them uncomfortable, the bizarre part is made
sure.
You know?
Look, I think, you know, I hope the movie finds its audience. I mean, I think it's okay that it's not for everybody. Right? First of all, don't bring your kids.
Yep.
But, you know, it's okay. Like, I just want to give it a chance to, like, the people who might appreciate a time when you went to the movies and you didn't know anything about. So often we go to movies and we've played the game or we've read the comic or even in the marketing materials, we're really very, very clear on what we're seeing. And I think we used to go to movies and not know.
Yeah.
You know, and it was so fun to just go and sit down and go, I have no idea what's going
to
happen.
But your intention was to make people uncomfortable, right? I think I read somewhere where you're trying to make it's a psychological experiment.
We are, yeah, sure. I think we want to leave. We want there to be side effects for the cure.
Yeah.
You know,
well, what is the cure according to you?
No, it's according to you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.